The Truth News Network. Fighting foes both foreign and domestic. Suffering fools, not at all. TNN.
The Truth News Network.
Dan Newman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I am glad you joined me today at Truth News Network. We've got a special chapter for you today, one that is seldom discussed here, or for that matter, pretty much anywhere where conservatives get together. It's about slavery. It's about the Civil War. And a question, was the Civil War about race, or was it about something else? You know, today, we constantly are inundated about the racial divide that exists today and has for several hundred years in the nation. It's amazing to me that with our living in the greatest country in world history, arguably the most innovative technology in existence, with maybe the exception of China, and without question the best economy on earth today, we do not tackle the problems that go hand in hand with racial divide and racism, and finally put this puppy to bed. I guess the most frustrating part of that to me is that I'm certain if we honestly did address the issues from all sides, objectively, unemotionally if possible, Americans could resolve all of those differences. But we just don't do it. And we never have. Just so you remember, let's take a look at a few notes about the Civil War. It began when the Confederates bombarded Union soldiers at Fort Sumter, South Carolina. That was April 12, 1861. And the war ended just 4 years later, in the spring of 1865. Robert E. Lee surrendered the last major Confederate army to Ulysses S. Grant at Appomattox Courthouse on April 9, 1865. The last battle was fought at Palmito Ranch, Texas, on May 13th of 1865. At the beginning of the war, the northern states had a combined population of 22 million people. Southern states had a combined population of about 9 million. Big disparity there. It was reflected in the size of the armies in the field, too. The Union forces outnumbered Confederates. It was just about 2-1. The North, or the Union forces, numbered approximately 2.1 million, while the South, or Confederate forces, numbered approximately a little over a million. About 620,000 soldiers died from combat, accident, starvation, and disease during the Civil War. 620,000. This number came from an 1889 study of the war performed by William F. Fox and Thomas Leonard Livermore. They are very well known and well thought of historians. Both men fought for the Union. Their estimate was derived from an exhaustive study of the combat and casualty records generated by the armies over those 5 years of fighting. They accessed them and brought those stats to the world. A recent study puts the number of dead as high as 850,000, even a couple hundred more than their number. So how do those numbers compare to all the rest of the wars the United States has been involved in? Well, 620 soldiers died in the Civil War. 644,000 Americans died in all other wars combined. So, you put those numbers side by side, it wasn't until Vietnam that American military war death total numbers passed those that were lost solely in the Civil War. Needless to say, the Civil War was a horror to this nation then, and it still is. And many Americans still struggle in its aftermath. Those struggles stretch across the entire landscape of the country, and they touch every sector of American lives. The war impacted every American and even those who live here without citizenship at the time. With the issuance of the Emancipation Proclamation in September of 1862, African Americans, both free and runaway slaves, came forward to volunteer for the Union cause in substantial numbers. Beginning in October of that year, approximately 180,000 African Americans, comprising 163 units, served in the U.S. Army and 18,000 in the Navy. That month, the first Kansas Colored Volunteers repulsed a Confederate attack at Island Mound, Missouri. Men of the USCT, that stands for United States Colored Troops, units, went on to distinguish themselves on battlefields east and west at Port Hudson, Louisiana, Honey Springs, Oklahoma, Fort Wagner, South Carolina, New Market Heights, Virginia. African Americans constituted 10% of the entire Union Army by the end of the war, and nearly 40,000 died over the course of that war. Slaves and free blacks were present in the Confederate lines as hand servants and manual laborers. On March 13th of 1865, the Confederate Congress passed a law to allow black men to serve in combat, with the provision that nothing in this act shall be construed to authorize a change in the relation which said slaves shall bear toward their owners. For example, black soldiers would still be slaves. Then on the next day, the very next day, March 14th of 1865, the Confederate military issued General Orders No. 14, which provided for the raising of black combat regiments, but there is no official military documentation that indicates these orders were carried out or that any black soldiers were ever properly enlisted in the Confederate Army. There are a few photographs of blacks in Confederate uniforms, but those appear to be hoaxes. So let's get down to the meat of this entire conversation and what so many people avoid discussing. What started the war between the states? You know, a lot of folks debate the ultimate causes of the Civil War. And even though that is something that happens and will continue to happen, Pulitzer Prize winning author James McPherson wrote that, quote, "The Civil War started because of uncompromising differences between the free and slave states over the power of the national government to prohibit slavery in the territories that had not yet become states. When Abraham Lincoln won the election in 1860 as the first Republican president on a platform pledging to keep slavery out of those territories, seven slave states in the Deep South seceded and formed a new nation, the Confederate States of America. The incoming Lincoln administration and most of the Northern folks refused to recognize the legitimacy of those seven states' secession. They feared that it would discredit democracy and create a fatal precedent that would eventually fragment the no longer United States into several small squabbling countries." And remember, they came here from Europe. They saw a lot of that over there. They didn't want it over here. The burning issue that led to the disruption of the Union was the debate over the future of slavery. That dispute led to secession, and secession brought about a war in which the northern and western states and territories fought to preserve the Union, and the South fought to establish southern independence as a new confederation of states under its own constitution. The agricultural South utilized slaves to tend to its large plantations and perform other duties. Now listen to this segment of this very closely. "On the eve of the Civil War, some 4 million Africans and their descendants toiled as slave laborers in the South." 4 million. Slavery was interwoven into the Southern economy, even though only a relatively small portion of the population actually owned slaves. Everyone thought for many, many years that everybody that had anything of substance in the South owned slaves. But they didn't own many. Slaves, however, could be rented or traded or sold to pay debts. Ownership of more than a handful of slaves meant respect for the owners and contributed to social position. And slaves, as the property of individuals and businesses, represented the largest portion of the region's personal and corporate wealth as cotton and land prices declined and the prices of slaves soared. Think about that. The states of the North, meanwhile, one by one, had gradually abolished slavery. Many forget that every state in the Union had slavery. A steady flow of immigrants, especially from Ireland and Germany during the potato famine of the 1840s and 50s, ensured the North a ready pool of laborers, many of whom could be hired at low wages, diminishing the need to cling to the institution of slavery. So the northern states began one at a time to slip out of that practice. States quickly jumped into the fray as well, but not so much about slavery. Seldom discussed in Civil War conversations are the state issues of the day. Those state issues were very critical in the beginnings of the Civil War. They arose from state rights as compared to those of the federal government. Now remember this, many American settlers, in fact, most of the American settlers, fled from Europe less than a century before. They fled to America in large part to get out from under the heavy hand of a federal government that controlled just about every aspect of their lives. The framers of the U.S. Constitution made it clear with the first 10 amendments, known better as the Bill of Rights, that the only rights held by the federal government were those that were specifically given to them by the states. Jefferson and company were petrified that any U.S. federal government would as quickly as possible seize control of Americans throughout the New World and their lives. Our leaders were committed to prevent that thing from happening. Many of those in that process, in this evolving nation, feared the power that the centralized government in the U.S. was spreading itself into. Their fear of a too powerful federal government was a large contributing factor to the Civil War. The southern states were impacted in greater fashion because of slavery. But were those concerns driven by disdain or hatred for Africans? Was the racial divide that is so powerful today still in America a force in the attack on Fort Sumter that started it all? And was that racial chasm initiated by hatred for diversity, ethnic origin, religion, and/or skin color? To the editorial staff of Truth News Network, honestly, all of the above contributed to the deadliest war in U.S. history. Just imagine how much more devastation Americans would have sustained if the armies of the Union and Confederacy had access to weapons, as do our current military members. Just think about how much more damage, how much more human life could have been taken if they had these automatic weapons that our military has. In just a moment, we're going to bring you the rest of the story, a perspective on this whole conversation that is often, if not always, left out. And it's critical that you hear this. Back after this at Truth News Network. Sit tight.
Hi, Tom Baudet. Of all the things invented in 1962, some have faded away, like cassette tapes, and others are still very much with us, like lava lamps and Motel 6. Yep, Motel 6 is celebrating 50 years of giving travelers a good night's rest and saving you more for what you travel for. But we're just getting started. In fact, the longer you watch us, the better we get. Kind of like a lava lamp. Trippy. I'm Tom Baudet for Motel 6. 50 years and the light's still on.
You love chocolate.
Chocolate.
You love M&M's.
Oh, yes.
But your tastes have grown up, and you're just not wild about super sweet milk chocolate, so you've been avoiding M&M's.
Yeah.
Well, fear no more.
Huh?
M&M's dark chocolate to the rescue.
My heroes!
M&M's Dark Chocolate Candies, available wherever fine candies are sold.
TNN, when only the truth will do. TNN, the Truth News Network.
And welcome back. We're working really hard to find some common ground in this conversation about slavery. And to get that perspective, we're looking back at the Civil War and what caused it. And right now, the rest of the story. Throughout human history, whenever two countries or two factions within a country or multiple factions determine their differences substantiate going to war, seldom does this happen with just one specific initiating factor. Certainly, slavery was a huge factor and a major factor in the Civil War. Historians have, on the most part, ignored this in discussions about the reason or reasons for the Civil War until the 1990s. Things changed a bit then, and they began to look more and more into the actual sources of the war and did not just automatically place it at the feet of slavery. One major universal factor in historical wars was almost always economics. Let's face it, dollars and cents, or money in some other form, are the energy that drives the growth of every nation in many different ways. The economy in the United States in the run-up to the Civil War was in transition. But until the 1990s, historians pretty much ignored the role that American economics probably played in starting that war. The efforts to explain economic growth and timing of the United States' takeoff into industrialization in the decades leading up to the 1860s, together with extensive research into the economics of the slave system of the South and the impact of emancipation. All those brought economic questions dealing with the Civil War to the front of the line in causes of the war discussions. No one seriously doubts that the enormous economic stake the South had in its slave labor force was a major factor in the disputes that erupted in the middle of the 19th century. Remember this: Northern states were not exempt from slavery. They sooner than Southern states took action to move away from slavery, but slavery was not new to those Northern settlers. Slaves and slavery made a huge impact on Americans socially and economically, all Americans, not just those in the South. And the love of money, remember, is the root of all evil. That's a quote from Jesus Christ. Throughout world history, many wars have been fought and millions have died in the name of dollar signs. And they call it other currency names in other countries, of course. But we're speaking about the United States Civil War now. Dollars. Historians in the early 1990s took the cue and launched into an analysis of the economic impact of slavery in the South. Here are some of their findings. Listen critically and listen closely to these facts that historians, a huge group of very important and recognized and famous and actual and accurate historians came up with. In 1805, there were just over 1 million slaves worth about $300 million. 55 years later, there were 4 million slaves worth close to $3 billion. In the 11 states that eventually formed the Confederacy, 4 out of 10 people were slaves in 1860. And these people accounted for more than half the agricultural labor in those southern states. In the cotton regions, the importance of slave labor was even greater. The value of capital invested in slaves roughly equaled the total value of all farmland and farm buildings in the South. Though the value of slaves fluctuated from year to year, there was no prolonged period during which the value of the slaves owned in the U.S. did not increase dramatically. It's hardly surprising that Southern slave owners in 1860 were optimistic about the economic future of their region. They were, after all, in the middle of an unparalleled rise in the value of their slave assets. A historical economist named Gerald Gunderson unearthed some amazing facts regarding the economics of slavery in the South. In the 7 states where most of the cotton was grown, almost a half of the population were slaves, and they accounted for 31% of white people's income for all 11 Confederate states. Slaves represented 38% of the population in those states and contributed 23% of whites' income. That explained why Southerners, even those who did not own slaves, viewed any attempt by the federal government to limit the rights of slave owners over their property as a potentially catastrophic threat to their entire economic system. Remember this phrase, cotton is king? Well, it was heard all over the South, but it was also heard in northern states. The economic impact of cotton exploded in every area of the U.S., including up north. The export of cotton exploded. By the 1850s, the large majority of cotton produced in America was shipped and sold in Great Britain and Europe. Northern states benefited greatly as cotton drove the economic opportunities in the textile industry and other sectors in the Industrial Revolution that was underway. Slaves in the South primarily planted, developed, and harvested cotton that northern textile mills turned much of into cotton products. The remainder primarily went to Great Britain or Europe. With so much to lose on both sides of the Mason-Dixon line, economic logic suggests that a peaceful solution to the slave issue would have made far more sense than a bloody war. Yet, no solution emerged. So in summary, there is no doubt that slavery was the match that lit the fire that consumed the lives of those 600 plus thousands in the Civil War. But was racial animus the cause? Critical thinkers disagree, as they always will. Of course they do. They disagree on everything. Those experts are actually split right down the middle on that issue. But one thing is certain. Money played a very significant role. Now, don't get me wrong. Race and racial differences did too. But it's time to take a step back and analyze the total story from every side. If one does so, finding that economic factors and the way they played in the U.S. during this piece of the Industrial Revolution probably played an equal role in the Civil War as did slavery. How so, you ask? Southerners did not want to give up their revenue-generating platform. It's very simple. Abraham Lincoln and Republicans were not against the wonderful economic achievements directly and indirectly derived from the cotton industry in the South. They were opposed to the ownership of humans by other humans. The fundamental thing they hated was slavery. And quite honestly, slavery has been the scourge of the racial fires that still to this day burn brightly in America. Is there a way to a resolution on these disagreements? Well, the discussions of reparations keep coming up again and again, and are once again on the minds of Americans, thanks to Democrat 2020 presidential candidates who are already out there on the campaign trail. Whether or not reparations are owed, whether or not they're necessary or even workable solutions, is a hypothetical conversation we're not going to undertake at Truth News Network. Hey, it's tough enough to analyze factual data to reach factual conclusions. Without that data, a reparations conversation is nothing more than more fuel to this raging fire of racial tension and divide. Unfortunately, the political agenda has for 150 years plus kept racism around as a convenient tool to use whenever politicians find it necessary, doing so as a blight on the political landscape of the U.S. But human nature has always prevailed in this depraved pursuit of division. And it's intentional, always intentional. Sadly, there are those who surreptitiously find ways to insert racial animus in every political conversation. Their objective for doing so? Division. One would think that after so many years of watching the cyclical rise and fall of public outcry against racial issues, America's political leaders would diligently determine to finally smoke the peace pipe of unity and find an effective process to bring Americans back together. Obviously, that has not happened. And sadly, I can't see that happening in the current political atmosphere. But you know what? There is hope. Hope in the fact that this nation is really one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The critical word of that sentence is all. Who can be the tie that binds? Who can tamp down the massive fires of racism that burn ever so brightly from the west to the east? You know, I have no idea who that might be or when it might happen. But what I know for absolute certainty is that God opened the door to this nation from its inception, has led through a couple of centuries groups of people in leadership in the right direction for the people of the United States, and that God himself will continue moving us down that path. Yeah, it is not doubtful that we have made mistakes, but getting and giving forgiveness for those mistakes and making route adjustments on our travels is what being human beings that interact with each other is all about. We don't live alone. We're not alone on this earth. We've got to learn to live together. We'll get there. Boy, I hope we'll get there in my lifetime. Here's one factor that will play heavily into the timing of total racial reconciliation in America. When we each are willing to say to each other and mean honestly this statement, just because I think something is right doesn't automatically make it right. And just because I think something is wrong doesn't automatically make it wrong. Now, you've heard that multiple times in our stories at Truth News Network. They are principles that honest Americans must grasp before we will ever achieve racial unity. I'm positive. I am certain we can do that. And anything worth having is worth hurting for. If hurting is necessary for racial harmony, I think Americans should be just about hurting enough by now. And to quote that Southern intellectual, let's get her done. Thanks for joining me here today for this important conversation. Thank you so much for listening all the way through and thinking it all the way through. So until we get together again, find a way to think through and come up with some answers for you, for yourself. And let's begin to have meaningful, honest conversations with each other. Until we get back together, you have a great day. So long, everybody.
Not just political, not just lifestyle, but always relevant. Real Truth, Real News, TNN, the Truth News Network.